Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, as Avante Okendo's remains are buried, we want to open the phones later in the program for anyone who loves or works with autistic children. What are you feeling today, and what can we learn from Avante Okendo's disappearance and death? Also today, David Remnick, editor of The New Yorker, on his Obama mega article this week and his coming trip to Sochi as a Russia expert for NBC during their Olympics coverage. Remnick wrote a scathing article about Putin and gay rights a couple of weeks ago. But first, we've been having a bit of debate within the office about the role of political carrots and sticks, with Chris Christie in hot water for allegedly punishing his political enemies, as you well know, and reports that New York City Council President Melissa Mark Viverito is rewarding her political friends with plum jobs. We've been discussing what crosses the line as inappropriate or corrupt wheeling and dealing, and what counts as effective political negotiation. Joining us for this as we open up the phones are David Plotz, editor of Slate, and Bridget Harrison, politics professor at Montclair State University. David, Bridget, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning,
Brian.
Good to be here,
Brian.
And listeners, the phones are open. Where is that line for you? 212-433-WNYC or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We also have a good conversation already going on our Facebook page. So, David, Bridget, listeners, can we all agree as a starting point that closing lanes to the George Washington Bridge as payback for a political endorsement, if that's what happened, causing a four-day traffic jam for the general public, crosses the line of what we should consider acceptable? David?
Yes, it crosses the line because it was incredibly stupid. It punished the wrong people, and he got caught.
Bridget?
Well, I agree, and I think that the difference between the kinds of corruption that might be admirable or the kinds of corruption that actually may grease the system's wheels, it's different when that idea stems from the idea that politicians are protecting their constituents. And so they're kind of the paternal figure. They're the ones taking the hits. They're also one getting the rewards. And that's why I think in New Jersey, we tend to turn a blind eye to things like bribery. But when you start messing with the general public, when you start messing with people's constituents, that's when you cross the line. And it becomes enormously outrageous, as we've seen in the state of New Jersey and now throughout the country this week.
I think there are forms of messing with constituents that are even fair game. I think the form of, I will put this road here and not there, the ones that are sort of at larger scale, I will do a development that's going to aid this town and not that one, that seems to me within the bounds of legitimate political corruption and favor giving and patronage.
I would agree. I mean, I think that's a longstanding tradition. But I think the difference is that, you know, this was punitive. This wasn't, you know, there's that kind of idea of carrots and sticks. And so rewarding a political ally by giving them a development or a bridge or a road or whatever, that's kind of the heart of politics.
So wait a minute, David.
Go ahead. Well, no, I was just going to ask Bridget. I mean, I've been thinking about this question. Isn't the reward there? So let's say you're going to give, I'm not from New Jersey, so Hoboken and not Montclair. Let's just say you give Hoboken the road, and therefore the road doesn't go to Montclair. Isn't that just as much a punishment for Montclair as it is a reward for Hoboken?
I guess theoretically it is, but because it's unrealized and it doesn't mean that someone's husband who just started their job is going to be 40 minutes late and he's been unemployed for a year, or someone's toddler who's missing, the emergency personnel can't get to the house. So because it's an opportunity cost, if you will, it's an unrealized benefit. I think that New Jerseyans and Americans are kind of immune to that inside baseball horse trading. But when, you know, there was a great line, I don't know if you saw the movie American Graffiti, or, I'm sorry, American Hustle.
Yeah.
And the mayor of Camden the reason why he was so sympathetic was because he genuinely had his constituents at heart. And I think that we tend to give our politicians, even our corrupt politicians, the benefit of the doubt because we believe since the early eras of Boston, Boss Tweed, and even before that, that they're protecting us. And when they start not to protect us or when other politicians start to do us tangible harm, then we get our backs up.
So let me jump in here because this isn't just a hypothetical discussion. David, how about the mayor of Hoboken's allegation that the governor tied Sandy Aid to the mayor's support for a development project? Are you arguing that using constituents and horse trading in that way is just the politics and politics and that's okay?
I would argue that we need a much greater latitude about what's permissible. I certainly think Sandy Aid is a hard case because it has the quality of emergency aid. I don't know that story well enough to speak, but you know, you wouldn't want to deprive emergency aid to people, and that would be unfortunate. But in general, do I think it is fine to condition benefits that you're going to give to other politicians on them supporting something you want? Yeah, I think that's fine.
So Sandy Aid is sacred, I'll use that word, because it was a freak storm that left so many families devastated. It's also something that unites the area emotionally. So in a certain sense, it's sacred. But you're saying if it was money for road repairs or parks, which has been a concern of Mayor Zimmer, or the arts, that Hoboken needed as much as anywhere, and we learned that the governor may have tied it explicitly to support for a development project, we wouldn't be having the same brouhaha?
Well, I can't imagine the people of New Jersey would be either surprised or up in arms about arts funding being conditioned on support for development. I certainly wouldn't be. And, you know, what, going back to Bridget's point, it's the acuteness of something like Sandy or the bridge that is what gets people up in arms.
Yeah.
In the sense that you're really directly messing with people's lives. And the arts funding doesn't qualify.
Bridget,
that way.
Go ahead.
Well, I think that actually differently about this. I don't think that Sandy Aid is actually sacred, and I think in fact that is why Mayor Zimmer couldn't go to the media when this initially occurred. Because if she had, she would have said, I applied for $100 million in Sandy Aid and I didn't get it. And people would have said, well, so what? That's politics. I think that the fact that she made these allegations in the context of the Fort Lee scandal gives them a heightened legitimacy. And now people look at the Christie administration with a jaundiced eye, one that is politically retaliatory. And when you bring into the fact that this set of victims were victims of Sandy, it stinks, and people find that objectionable. But I don't think that there would have been this public outcry if Mayor Zimmer had made these allegations void of that previous retaliatory context. I think that was important in laying the groundwork. And by the way, there have been many, many examples of individuals coming forward who have alleged to have been retaliated against. Katie Zernicki with the New York Times ran a story on Christmas Day talking about very relatively small incidents. You know, the former acting governor of the state of New Jersey disagreed with the governor on some appointments and had his security detail pulled. And you know, a bunch of little minor incidents in and of themselves, people would just kind of shrug and say, well, that's politics. But I think when the stories reach a critical mass and you have this very egregious example in which average everyday citizens were hurt, and oh, by the way, you don't mess with New Jerseyans' commutes, then it becomes a much more grander scale kind of scandal.
So listeners, where is this line for you? 212-433-WNYC. Do you think that there wouldn't have been the outrage, shouldn't have been the outrage over tying Sandy to support for a development project if that in fact happens, were it not for the context of the George Washington Bridge lane closure scandal and this broader pattern of behavior like this on the part of the Christie administration that seems to be coming to the fore. 212-433-WNYC, and we'll get into some New York examples in a minute with David Plotz, editor of Slate, and Bridget Harrison, politics professor at Montclair State. 212-433-9692. And I think etiquette suggests that we go to Hoboken for our first caller. John, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. She asked where the line is drawn, and I actually don't think this is a gray area. The line is the law. What the Christie administration is accused of doing, insofar as the bridge is concerned, is a clear violation of New Jersey's official misconduct statute. And what he's accused of doing insofar as Hoboken and AA there is concerned is a clear violation of federal law.
Are you a lawyer, John?
Yes, I am. So people are focusing on the emotional quality of it, which is understandable, and the timing of, for example, Mayor Zimmer's disclosure, which is understandable. But it misses the point that wherever the gray area is, there is no more gray area when you break the law. And the other thing that I would add, insofar as Mayor Zimmer is concerned, is I think the reason she didn't come forward before is not quite what one of your guests just said. I think it's something slightly different, which is since there hadn't been a critical mass yet, which would have, which is out now, if she had come forward and said that, she would have been hung out to dry. But now, the Christie administration, even if everything that has been said isn't true, does not have the strength to retaliate.
Right.
So that's fair.
But John, considering the conversation that we've been having so far, are you setting a standard here of what's illegal, not to mention unethical, too high compared to reality? That is, if there was any kind of horse trading that suggested that the mayor of Hoboken might get something more for her city if she supported a development project that the governor favored, that would be illegal? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not. The law says that when these are federal monies and they're state monies and they're to be allocated for a specific program based on a specific criterion, and if Mayor Zimmer's contentions are accurate, what she was told by
Lieutenant Governor.
She's told by that, I guess it's like the Deputy Governor.
Yeah, Lieutenant Governor,
title,
right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
What she said was they shouldn't be linked, but they are. So it was a rather overt admission that they don't have the authority to do this, but they're going to. And I think that's legally correct in that they don't have the authority to link them, but they did. Now, there are other areas where you have some authority, right? Because you can pick and choose based on certain criterion, and you can reward constituents. That's okay, but what you can't do is break the law. So it's one of those things where this particular example is being talked about in terms that are greater than what's actually happening.
All right, John, I'm going to leave it there. But the line, Bridget Harrison, is fine that he draws. I'm sure we will, many of us, walk away confused from that conversation as clear and bright as John tried to make the line between where horse trading ends and where illegal bribery or extortion or whatever begins, right?
Well, and I would, I guess, disagree a bit with John's contention in that the Sandy money, yes, it was federal money. Yes, it was to be doled out to municipalities. But the federal government never said, Mr. Christie, you need to give this block of $100 million to the city of Hoboken. They said, here's a pile of money. Distribute it to your municipalities. And, of course, we would assume that there is some kind of objective standard by which that money gets allocated. But, of course, those decisions are made at the state level. Just because Hoboken requests $100 million doesn't mean they necessarily get it. But what we've seen in that batch of money that Mayor Zimmer requested is that most municipalities who were largely affected, like hers was, actually got their requested amount of money and more. And so the fact that she got so little money, I think it was about $334,000, is an indication that there was something else going on here. that in my mind is, and the overt threat, if Mayor Zimmer has that accurately, is the illegality, not the state's failure to give what the federal government gave to the city.
So let me raise another example, and this one comes from the news from New York City this week, the city council committee chairmanships that were doled out. Here's yesterday's New York Times article on this. The headline is, "New Speaker Gives Her Allies Plum Posts." And it says, Melissa Mark Viverito on Wednesday distributed the spoils of her victory, rewarding allies and punishing at least a few adversaries as she assigned plum council posts. James Van Bramer and Jalissa Ferreras, two council members from Queens who bucked the county's Democratic leaders to support Ms. Mark Viverito, were given two of the council's most powerful positions, majority leader to Mr. Van Bramer and finance committee chairwoman to Ms. Ferreras. Mr. Van Bramer's position comes with a $20,000 stipend. Ms. Ferreras and Mr. Greenfield's each come with $15,000 stipends. The base salary of council members is $112,000. Then it continues a little later. Four members who had supported her opponent, Mr. Gorodnik, were left with no leadership positions. Rory Lanceman of Queens, Rosie Mendez of Manhattan, and Andy King and Annabel Palma of the Bronx. Ms. Palma, who is one of two members to vote against ratifying the appointments, criticized the process as not being inclusive or transparent. Quote, "This is pure politics," she said. So, David Plotz, should this be a scandal, or is that just the politics in politics?
Oh, my gosh. Of course that's not a scandal. That is what's the job of someone chosen for a senior political official, senior political position they've won legitimately, that carries with it authority to dole out appointments, has to do. I mean, you can argue with her choices at a strategic level. You can say maybe it would have been smarter to include some of the people who are opposed to you because it will ultimately make it easier for you to get something done in the long run, and that was a mistake.
But in terms
but
of viewing,
you certainly can't argue with her right to sort of to select the people that she thinks deserve the job, and they may deserve it because they've given her strong support, and she has the authority to do it.
But does that make somebody deserve politics? Does that make somebody deserve a job that they've given her support, as opposed to that they're at the best of figuring out the city's finances to be chairman of the finance committee or whatever the thing is? Shouldn't it make us cast a jaundiced eye? And doesn't it make people more cynical about politics to see that the new speaker, who ran on a progressive reform platform, no less, gives out chairmanships on the basis of who supported her rather than more abstract principles of right and wrong and quality?
You can say, I mean, certainly if you can object and you can feel that way, but you can also make a case that this is a council chair who wants to get things done in this organization that she's leading, and one way she wants to get things done is to have people who are trusted allies in positions of power who are going to be in a position to advance her agenda, who she can rely on to advance the agenda that she's been elected to carry out.
But
better to have in those positions than people who are obviously trustworthy?
There's a line somewhere, because here's a clip of Melissa Mark Viverito's closest council ally, arguably Brad Lander from Brooklyn, on New York One Wednesday night, drawing a very clear distinction and a very clear line between stipends for council members that we were just discussing and in any impact on the money that each member gets for discretionary spending in their districts, known as member items. Listen.
And the very first item on this platform of reforms that we've committed to move forward on is to take the politics out of member items. So it doesn't matter whether you supported the speaker or didn't support the speaker. It doesn't matter how you vote on bills. That won't be what determines how much resources your district gets.
So, Bridget Harrison, how about that one? No horse trading for the amount of money on member items, the amount of money you would have as a, you know, discretionary fund to spend in your district. Is that a higher standard than usual in politics? Would a standard like that lock out something like the development support for aid to Hoboken, you know, if we were to apply it to New Jersey? And is that the right place to draw the line?
Well, you know, Brian, in looking at Melissa Mark Viverito's practice, I think that there was that expectation that because she ran on a progressive platform that things would be done differently. But honestly, in my view, if she had chosen her opponents to fill some of these plum positions, to give them the best Lulus, as they're called, then in my view, that's a real abrogation of her responsibility. She won her city council presidency based on the support of a group of individuals whom I'm assuming are quite like-minded, who think along her lines, who have the same priorities. Isn't it then incumbent upon her to put those people in the positions of greatest responsibility and authority? If she were to cross over and appoint her opponents to those top positions, well, then what's the point of her election? Wouldn't then her opponent have been better positioned to be in city council? So I think that in many ways that's kind of a false expectation. Mm-hmm. I think that in New York City people have that expectation because she did run on this kind of progressive platform. But this isn't even horse trading. This is kind of standard operating procedure. And oh, by the way, it takes place in corporate America every day, right? We reward the people that work well with us, that are our allies in businesses, and we try to keep down our enemies and not support them and give them the best assignments and the opportunities to shine.
And
that's,
I don't think the media,
the real world.
Right. And the media doesn't pay nearly enough attention to that. But David, go ahead.
Well, progressive does not mean suicidal. Progressive does not mean stupid. On the point about the member
district. But we should also say about the New York City Council, this would not be like Nancy Pelosi appointing Rand Paul to a chairmanship. I realize I'm crossing houses of Congress there. But they're all progressive Democrats, more or less, in the New York City Council. So it's really about who supported who. But go ahead.
On the funding for member districts, I more power to the New York City Council if it wants to change its rules this way. I suspect they're going to regret it because, again, if you look at earmarks in Congress, which is a slightly different case, there's a lot of evidence that the ability to lubricate with small sums of money is a very important power in a legislature, that in order to get to be able to horse trade, you have to be able to give people small benefits that they can take to their constituents. And Congress has taken away earmarking, and there's significant evidence that it's put grit in the wheels, that it makes it even harder to get legislation done. And I wonder if the New York City Council is going to discover that when everyone gets the same amount, no matter what they do, and that their ability to dole out gifts and little goodies for the districts is diminished, your ability to influence and sway legislators who don't want to follow your political agenda is diminished too, and bills get harder to pass and less stuff gets done.
So you're saying it's not only okay, it's a public good
it's a small form of corruption
earmarks.
That pays off. Yes, earmarks are a small form of corruption that generally grease the wheels, and you end up with, in the case of the U.S., you end up with dumb museums and roads that are ill-placed and bridges that don't belong where they are. But that sort of tiny percentage of money spent on that is probably good money spent.
David Plotz, editor of Slate, and Bridget Harrison, politics professor at Montclair State, and Jennifer and Tenafly are on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Thank you very much. I wanted to say, respectfully, I disagree with the premise of both of the guests today. The fact that a little bit of corruption, or even a lot of corruption, for the benefit of people is somehow good. I disagree with that. Corruption is corruption, and it is not good. And as I think you pointed out earlier, corruption for the benefit of one group of people is going to harm another group of people. So I just wanted to say that I disagree with that.
So Jennifer, I don't know your politics, but here's one that that I looked up this morning, actually. LBJ looking for votes for the Civil Rights Act promised members of Congress from Western states that he would support a big dam project that they were interested in. Not just support, he would find the money for it. That's a carrot, not a stick. But it meant more funding for water and power projects out there in exchange for those votes for the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which is in the news again for the 50th anniversary, and for those states, the southern states, that weren't going to vote for the act no matter what, no offer of extra funding. And a lot of supporters of President Obama looking for success on progressive agenda items say, why doesn't he wield his power as effectively as LBJ did and knock heads and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? How do you react to that?
You found my soft spot.
Oh, good.
You know, no, that's a tough one because civil rights is obviously a greater good and something that we want to encourage and we need, and it's for the benefit of everybody. People in the Western states got two benefits. They got the Civil Rights Act and they got these extra funding projects, whereas people in Southern states only got one benefit, which was the Civil Rights Act. You know, I have to be honest, you stumped me there.
Yes, okay.
All
right. And you
How
didn't,
do you define corruption?
Is that considered corruption? David, is that considered corruption? The same kind of corruption that we're talking about that is, you know, on the right
sure.
side of the law?
Yeah, it's absolutely the same kind of corruption. On the other hand, it is it's slightly unfair because most of the things that Chris Christie is bullying people around don't have the same kind of public aim at the end.
Sure.
A lot of it was purely political, it seems. It was just payback for a political affront, a political slight.
So there would be a difference.
Or with some minor, you know, it's a development deal. I mean, like, that's
right.
allocation of where bricks are laid.
But then, David, there would be a difference for you, a moral difference, at least if Christie was leaning on the mayor of Hoboken because his buddy from the Port Authority was going to make extra money at his law firm from the success of this development deal, which is what's alleged, as opposed to if Christie thought this development deal was good for the economic development of the state and then threatened the mayor of Hoboken with San Diego. That's a distinction that matters, right?
It's a distinction that matters, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time hunting for those distinctions. I would give much wider latitude in general to politicians to lean on people for reasons and hope that for the public good.
And yet, Bridget, I think that's the distinction that the FBI is making in investigating the Hoboken situation, right? If they come up with the fact that if they come up with it being a fact that Christie, through his lieutenant governor, leaned on Mayor Zimmer to support this development project because it would in some way benefit David Sampson, his buddy, that may be a crime. If he did it because he thinks that development is good for Hoboken, is good for New Jersey, is good for income tax revenues, is good for jobs, then it's another matter. Am I right or wrong?
Well, I think you are right, but the reality is that the governor's goals may have been included both of those things, and perhaps much more. There could have been residual benefits not just from Mr. Sampson, but from the developers themselves or people working for the developers. We don't know, and of course that will be for the U.S. attorney to decide. I think the problem, though, when we're talking about this idea of corruption, is to think that any kind of negotiation is corrupt, and I just don't see that. In Linda's example, she was saying that if, you know, my constituents benefit and hers don't, that in itself is corrupt. But there's the assumption there that there's a zero sum of whatever goodies were allocated. And oftentimes in politics, there's not.
But usually there is, because there's such a thing as a budget, right?
There is such a thing as a budget, but what we also know is that budgets expand oftentimes because of earmarks. And so my representatives not negotiating and horse trading and log rolling his or her votes to benefit me does not necessarily mean that there won't be an additional earmark. It simply means that I'm not going to get it. And given our electoral structure, in which we have 435 members whose jobs are specifically to allocate for those little congressional districts, in my view, it's their responsibility to horse trade and get those earmarks, those bridges and laboratories and research projects and roads for their constituents.
So
that's what they're in Washington for.
We're almost out of time, but I'll throw one other into this example. Dawn Zimmer's predecessor as mayor, Peter Camerano, went to jail for accepting $15,000 in exchange for support for real estate development projects. Now, they weren't real estate development projects. It was a sting operation. But, Bridget, it means you can't take that money from the developer himself. Can you take $15,000 in extra funding from the state for the city in exchange for supporting a development project that the governor wants and have it be morally different? Is it just because the money came from private hands, or the fake money that was involved in the sting operation seemed like it was going to come from a private developer, that Peter Camarena went to jail and the rest of it you're defending?
Well, I think that the fact that it came from private hands and remained in private hands, I think that, our caller John earlier was talking about
the
that
mayor, the clear, mayor's private hands as opposed to the
exactly,
city
as opposed
coffers.
To the municipality. And so that's a clear violation
right.
of
okay.
the law. However, in the political climate in which we are operating, in an era of super PACs, nowadays, I think that most politicians wouldn't take that $15,000 unless you're the governor of Virginia and put that in their back pocket. Nowadays, they just say, give an unlimited sum to my super PAC, and oh, by the way, it's completely legal.
And beyond that, they could just get those buddies to spend independent expenditures as allowed by Citizens United, but that's another show. I just want to read out some of the things that are posted on our Facebook page about this, where the conversation is really taking off. Edith writes, interesting question. Speaking realistically, in order to get things done, there will always be a bit of quid pro quo in politics, as in anything else. You've never done it? Come on, she writes. But then Dan writes, it's one thing to do something quid pro quo in cooperation, but many times people should be doing it anyway or shouldn't do it at all. In those cases, it corrupts the process and makes less than ideal the outcome. Norma writes, isn't giving your friends and allies favors the point of gaining political power? But Keith writes, it's an easy formula. If it's happening in New York, it's corrupt and degenerate. Ha, ha, ha. But nobody said that about New Jersey. So listeners, keep the conversation going on our Facebook page at facebook.com/BrianLehrer WNYC. And gosh, I feel like we've just scratched the surface and we could go on with this all day, but this time has flown. So David Plotz, editor of Slate, and Bridget Harrison, politics professor at Montclair State University, thank you so much for joining us for this.
Always a pleasure, Brian. Thank you.